Parlor is Kansas City's new food hall. It's a two-story brick building in the East Crossroads, and it's got a bunch of different local food vendors inside. This is how a lanky young guy with blue hair describes it while twirling rice noodles in a bowl. He says a food hall is like a
hipster upscale food court.
Tell me more about that.
I mean, there's hipsters everywhere.
That may be true. There are also a few other differences between this food hall and the food courts that were popular in the 80s and 90s.
More upscale alcohol options.
I mean, look around. This place is different. It's got the decor is different than just your basic cafeteria, whatever. And they do a good job of mixing the bars and the outdoor space and everything.
Yeah, the look of the place is sort of office-y in a way, but like a cool downtown office. Colorful graffiti-style murals on the wall, sleek lamps, wood tables. But decor and booze and hipsters aside, there's another big difference between Parlor and a food court. Shopping mall food courts were full of national chains. These food vendors are local, and a lot of them are taking culinary risks. Rachel Reines is behind the counter at Carbone. Her food combines the flavors of the Yucatan region and Turkish cuisine.
Can you tell me about is it called cochinita?
Cochinita, yeah, you said it exactly right. So it's a classic Yucateca Mexican from the recipe from the peninsula. Usually they would use a lechon, like a baby pig, but here we just use pork shoulder. We marinate it in bitter orange juice and garlic and achiote paste overnight, and then we braise it wrapped in banana leaves.
Can you tell me about the mole wings?
Yeah, so mole is another classic Mexican sauce. It's everyone's grandma makes it differently. Ours, instead of roasting and burning all of the ingredients and then adding them to stock and cooking them down, we just roast and burn the ingredients and then blend them to make a dry rub. And then we add salt and sugar to kind of bake that nice roasty flavor. So the wings just get tossed in that.
The wings were amazing. I won't lie, crunchy breading with insane amounts of flavor and chicken that falls off the bone with yogurt sauce for dipping. Rachel loves the food hall setup.
It's nice to have the community of other like local chefs around you too. You can kind of like pop over and be like, hey, how do I problem solve this? Or
it's like you have coworkers, but as an independent business owner.
Yeah, it's cool.
Plus, this is a place where people might be willing to try some plantains, even if they wouldn't be sitting at home thinking, you know what I want for dinner tonight? Turkish Yucatan cuisine.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. It seems so obvious in my mind, but yeah.
I asked a lot of people eating at Parlor what they liked about the food hall concept, and everyone answered pretty much the same way. When you've got a group where everyone has different taste in food, people can get whatever they want and be happy.
I like the idea that you can get a lot of different food in one place.
We usually bring our kids here, and we have one of them today, and they don't always eat what we eat, so having multiple options kind of helps everybody out.
As a mother with two small children, it's also really nice to go in somewhere where I can go get Japanese food and I can get my kids a piece of pizza at the same time.
The fun, different opportunity to try a bunch of different things.
And that brings us back to the food court comparison. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And later on, we'll be talking about breweries. But first, a much newer trend in Kansas City, the food hall. Parlor is the Metro's second food hall. There's one in Lenexa, too. The trend is making its way here after a lot of success in big cities in the U.S. and in Europe. We also had one of our producers at a food hall just yesterday, Sylvia Maria Gross. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what did you think of the food hall experience?
Well, it's funny since I went a couple of weeks ago and then I went yesterday since we've been talking about food halls and them being a trend. And I grew up in the 80s in the food court days of the mall and stuff. And, you know, there is a lot of satisfaction in the Panda Express meals, but this is something totally different.
What's different about it to you?
What was different about it? I mean, it just a different level of food, and it seems like sort of the type of new restaurants that are opening around town, but little versions of them where you can sample. I went twice, and I went to the same two, the two times that I went, which is kind of funny, but also typical of me because I liked what I had the first few times.
So What do you think of the food truck comparison? Because I was thinking about this, and I enjoy the food truck thing. It makes sense that a food truck would be a fun option when it comes, like, to you. But when you go to a parking lot full of food trucks and there are, like, 1,000 generators running and you look around, like, there is a part of me that has the thought, this is not sustainable.
Well, it's indoors, and that is really a big difference, particularly since winter is coming on. But there's also a bar there, and, like, it's just very loungy. There are sofas at the front, and it has a very different feel to food trucks. Where I actually personally have a problem eating standing up or eating without a table in front of me, so I much prefer to actually be sitting at a table, because otherwise I have my meal all over me. So I love the idea of food trucks, but unless there's a picnic table nearby, I kind of have an issue with it.
Well, Sylvia, any final thoughts to share with us about your food hall experience so far?
Well, I think it's also just interesting that they text you when your food is ready, which is like a new thing for me. I guess I'm kind of a Luddite, but it's like, wow, they can just actually let you know and you can sit and talk to somebody and then go to the table.
This is the part of it that bothers me, in fact, the texting, because I don't like to have my phone in front of me when I'm sharing a meal with people or when I am just eating in general. Like, I don't want to be staring at my phone with my companions around me, and this seems like it's built around the idea that, yes, in fact, you will be doing that.
It's modern life, I guess.
It is modern life. Well, Sylvia Maria Gross, thank you.
You're welcome.
So now we are joined by Andrea Strong. She's the author of Food Halls Are the New Food Truck in Eater Magazine. Andrea Strong, good morning.
Good morning.
So maybe it does speak to my history growing up in Kansas City that my mind went to food courts, whereas you are in New York and you thought of food trucks.
Yeah, I mean, well, we do have some, I have some memories of growing up in Queens and going to the mall and having like an Orange Julius with my friends while we looked at Benetton and whatever other brands were around then. But I do think the more modern contemporary equivalent of predecessor of a food hall would be the food truck. But the food truck has some drawbacks, as I said in my article. You know, gas prices were going up. People had to follow you on social media. And then, you know, once
like,
they
where
found,
will you be?
Where will you be? And is it going to be snowing or freezing? And you're eating standing up and you have to go to a meeting and you drop half your burrito on your blouse. So I think that food halls take away some of the challenges of food trucks, but they still offer operators the low barrier to entry so that there's not a lot of startup costs associated with opening a stall in a food hall, which makes it attractive to a small startup.
Yeah. What is the whole backstory on this food parlor concept? Where and when did it really start?
Well, I would say the first real food hall, as we see it now, started in 2013. It was developed by Gotham in Manhattan on a very far westerly avenue in the city called 11th Avenue, where they were developing a high-rise residential building. And there were really no services over there. 11th Avenue is like no man's land in Manhattan. And they were like, what are we going to put in this as our anchor tenant? You know, a Duane Reade or a Citibank wasn't really going to help the people upstairs all that much. And to their credit, they looked at models like Chelsea Market, which had opened in the late 90s. LA's Grand Central Market opened in 1917. San Francisco's Ferry Building opened in 2002, and Gotham West, when they opened their market in 2013, they took those building blocks and turned it into something much more chic and fashionable. And they put 43 food stalls in their first food hall and included everything from coffee to ramen and burgers and a butcher shop. And so everyone in that building had that amenity. You know, and it also ended up drawing people westward who didn't even live there.
This is really, for people who don't realize it, I mean, Kansas City just got its second food hall, but this is not a minor trend. When your article came out in August, you wrote that there were already 25 active food halls in New York City, with at least 10 more under construction. And someone might say, well, that's New York, but you also write that in new suburban mixed-use developments all over this country that are currently being planned, where the food hall's going to go is often the first thing they talk about.
Yeah, I think it's a real, I mean, developers see this as a win-win. I mean, for the developer, they get tons of foot traffic, guaranteed rent. They use it as an amenity when they sell the residential units above. And it, for the vendors who are going into those spaces, again, the rent is relatively cheap. The stalls are built out for you, so if you're opening your own restaurant, it can cost you $500,000, even more, to build out your restaurant and put in your hoods and your bathrooms and banquettes. But at a food hall, you get 300 square feet or whatever it is, and you have to trick it out so it look, you know, it represents who you are with your logo and your design. But, you know, your equipment, your fixtures are there, and you basically walk in, and it's really turned out to be a winning proposition for both the developer and the tenant.
You know, technology, I was just talking about this with my colleague, Sylvia Maria Gross. It's a big part of this. And at least at Parler, they text you when your food is ready. So you do look around and see a lot of people sitting and looking at their phones, which isn't unusual. But it, what's different is that that is built into the model of how the restaurant works in this case.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that about Parler, because I've eaten at many food halls in Brooklyn, where I live, and in Manhattan, and I haven't been texted. I've just sort of waited around or strolled around and gotten a glass of wine and then gone back to get my food. So maybe that's the next iteration. But I do think social media is a big part of the food hall experience. You know, everyone's Instagramming their bowls of ramen or Korean buns or tacos or whatever, and that helps the vendors get more foot traffic.
There, in this case, like, people are also texting pictures of the bathroom door, which says, "I think yes, girl."
Oh, really?
That's what had actually brought one of the people I met to Parler the other day, was an Instagrammed photo of the bathroom door.
Okay. There's an Instagram moment in every toilet, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, talk to me about, I mean, do you think that the food hall will replace the food truck?
I think that they can coexist, and I hope that the food truck continues to thrive. I have seen food trucks become great options for outdoor concerts and in parks, and where otherwise you would just have, you know, your New York City water dog and a pretzel that probably has been in that cart for 53 years. But now, you know, in Central Park, you could have a food truck, or I went to a Paul Simon concert in Flushing Meadow Park this summer, and it was just, there were tons of food trucks serving food. So I do think that there is a life for both. Seasonally, I think the food truck is a lot more dependent on the weather, but I think they can continue to thrive together.
You know, before we go, we are about to talk about breweries, and the alcohol component of the food hall does seem important.
Absolutely. I think that most developers who I've spoken to, while they'll say, you know, we will only put one pizza shop or one taco shop or one ramen shop because of non-compete issues, they are very clear that they will have more than one bar and more than one coffee shop, more than one winery or cocktail bar, because people want to have a cocktail and walk around or have a beer and stroll around. It's like shopping. It's culinary browsing. And if I could walk around a mall and have a beer while shopping, I would love to do that. So here I can have a glass of rosé or froze, as was the case this summer, and stroll around and see what you might want to snack on for the evening. So I do think that alcohol is a big component.
Do you think that the alcohol is as experimental as the food in a lot of these places, as just like an entrepreneurial opportunity, the food hall seems like it would be a great place for that. There, I ask because one of the drinks I saw on a menu at a Scandinavian food booth was a Swedish fish cocktail. So it was like this, the candies, the Swedish fish was the basis for this cocktail.
Wow. Did you try that?
I didn't. It was over a work lunch.
Okay. Yeah. That's not a work lunch drink.
It is not.
Well, that, yeah, I do think I've seen some really sort of creative breweries in the DeKalb Market in Brooklyn. There's like a craft brewer's booth where they have, I don't know, 4 dozen different craft beers on tap and you can go and try them all. But I think anything goes in a food hall. Again, the risk is low. So if you want to open a cocktail bar based on 1970s candies, you can go for it. And it, even if it doesn't work, you know, it won't kill you.
Andrea Strong, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Andrea has been a food writer for 20 years. She wrote about food halls for Eater magazine. Up next, breweries. Tell us about the place you like to go, the local craft beer you like to drink. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is a food show on KCUR's Central Standard. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we've got a food show, also a drink show. Our food critics are here to talk about the dozens of breweries on the Kansas City scene. Call 816-235-2888 to talk about your favorite local beer or the brew pub near you. 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us. We are at KCURCST. We'll be talking with the critics in just a minute, but first, Boulevard Brewery is kind of the grandfather of the whole local craft beer movement. Before Boulevard, there wasn't a whole lot going on, and then for a long time, they were basically the only show in town. So now that there are so many breweries in town, we thought we'd step back and get the story of how we got from there to here. Jeremy Danner is with us now. He's with Boulevard, and his job title is Ambassador Brewer. Hi, Jeremy.
Good morning.
You're going to have to explain that title to me. I love it.
Sure, yeah. So I get that a lot. Basically, I started at Boulevard back in 2008. I started actually, my first job was part-time putting corks in a PVC tube, shooting them over to the corking machine on our smokestack line. And then I brewed from March of 08 until the beginning of 2013. And during that time, I became the brewer who would go out to dinners and tastings and events. And that eventually took up so much of my schedule that they let me create my own job. And we landed on Ambassador Brewer. So I'm someone from the brewing team who can go out and represent the brewery and talk about our beer on a wide variety of levels, from people who've never had craft beer to people who own and operate breweries. Is kind of, that's my audience.
And so that second audience interests me. You go out and talk to other people who are starting breweries. This sounds very, like I could imagine a company that has the sort of heft behind it that Boulevard does, trying to really hang on to that rather than sharing their knowledge.
Sure. I think that's what people don't, they don't know, and then they're surprised by about the beer business is we're actually very friendly. You know, we want everyone opening up in Kansas City to make great beer because we know that people aren't always going to drink Boulevard beer. You're not always going to have your first craft beer experience with a Boulevard beer. So if you go down the street, we want you to have an amazing beer and think, hey, I love craft beer. I'm going to go check out other breweries in town, and hopefully that includes a stop by Boulevard.
Well, so as the founder of Boulevard tells the story, everyone thought he was crazy when he started talking about making local beer back in the late 80s. What do you know about that time period, that moment in Kansas City beer history?
Sure. So I was 8 when Boulevard officially opened, which is more than, you know, some of my coworkers can say. I've been there 10 years now. So there are people who are like, I've never known life without Boulevard. But basically, John had this awakening moment in Paris in a Belgian beer bar called Le Goose, and came back to the States and was bummed about the variety of beers that he could buy at the time. So he started homebrewing. And eventually, as someone who has access to free beer, I know that it's not hard to make friends. So John had a lot of people coming around trying his beer, and they talked him into making a go at it and writing a business plan. And he shopped it around town, and all the banks thought it was a cool idea, but no one wanted to give him money because they didn't understand why John would want to compete with Anheuser-Busch on the other side of the state. And what they didn't understand is that he didn't want to compete with them, and we still don't want to compete with them. they'll make in about 13 hours what we're going to make in an entire year. So there's no illusion of competition there. But yeah, John would go out to bars and he would hand people samples or set it on the bar and they would push it back to him saying, "And I'm not interested in trying that." And now you go out to a bar and a local brewery or a distiller walks up with samples and you're like, "Yeah, I'll try everything you have." You know, it's just, it's a lot more open.
How do you account for that though? How do you account for just the general culture being really closed off to the idea of something that isn't this familiar national brand that they've grown up seeing like in grandpa's koozie or whatever, to like bring it anything. It's local. I want to try it.
Yeah, that's exactly it though, is people were comfortable with that. That's what they grew up seeing. People like to say that people who, you know, drink craft beer all day that we're beer snobs, but really it's the people who drink the same beer all day, every day. Those are the real beer snobs who won't even try anything. So I think once people started talking to John, they found out he was a really good guy. Early on in the brewery, he would tell people, "Not everyone will like our beer, but there's no reason they shouldn't like us." And I think due to, you know, John's character and the folks that he chose to surround himself with back then and to this day, we have people who come to the brewery, you know, we offer them a sample of beer. "I don't drink beer." "Well, why are you here?" "Oh, I just love you guys so much and I wanted to bring my friends in from out of town to see the brewery." So I think that carried it. And then I think people just started thinking more about what they were eating and drinking and where it came from and who they were supporting. And I think if you have the option to purchase something from kind of a faceless gigantic corporation or the folks down the street, you know, people that you know, I think that's an obvious choice that you're going to at least try what the folks you know are making.
So obviously Boulevard is your favorite local brewery, or if it isn't, you're not going to tell me that. So let's just take Boulevard out of the equation for a moment. Is there an up-and-comer who intrigues you, someone you think we should be keeping an eye on?
You know, I think there's a lot. You know, it's like asking someone, you know, "What's your favorite beer?" And I have 12 beers I could name at the time that are my favorite. But
you can give a few.
I'll give a few, yeah. What I'm really excited about right now is BKS in the Brookside neighborhood. Brian and Mary Rooney started like this side project while they had their full-time jobs making beers that he was passionate about brewing, what people call hazy New England IPAs and really dry, funky, earthy farmhouse beers. And that's where I'm at. I want to drink beers that are in the 4.5 to 6% range that are super dry and kind of earthy. But he's open 2 or 3 days a week. He and his wife and a small team brew and package everything they do. And I think they don't have any ambition of growing. They just want to make enough beer to be happy and make what they want to make without ever, you know, giving control over what they're doing to someone outside their business, which I think that's a cool model.
And they are not open like all the time. They have limited hours, which maybe speaks to the idea of them possibly seeing themselves as kind of like appointment drinking in a way or something like that.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I think they recognize, I mean, they had full-time jobs and now I believe Brian has left his full-time job to focus on the brewery full-time, but they just didn't have the time to do that or the desire to. And I think that's really cool when you open a business to have a very strong concept of this is our model and this is what we want to do. And if you want to come drink our beer, you know, this is when we're open. But if not, like you said, there's dozens of breweries around town. You can find something you like that's open when you want to be there.
So when we think about Kansas City beer, that's one thing. Would you say that there is a character to Midwestern beer as a region?
You know, I think I don't believe terroir exists in beer. I think that's a wine thing. But I do believe there's sort of a sensibility about the Midwestern palate. And I think that's reflected in things we've done at Boulevard. If you go back to 1999, Stephen Powell's, our brewmaster, came over from the Flanders region of Belgium, and he's always instilled in our brewing team that we brew balanced beers. You know, we make beers that are enjoyable, that are full of flavor, but you have one and you think, you know, I should have another one of those. And I think you see that with Midwestern IPAs, you see that with some of the Imperial Stouts we make. They're bold, you know, full-flavored beers. There's no dumbing down or dampening of anything, but at the same time, these are very approachable beers that don't freak you out and they're comfortable to drink.
Well, Jeremy Danner, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Jeremy is the ambassador brewer for Boulevard, and now you can call 816-235-2888 to tell us about your favorite local beer or your favorite neighborhood brew pub. 816-235-2888. I'm joined now by Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine and Mary Block, who blogs about food at Around the Block. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So when you as food critics think about breweries, what do you think about?
Well, you know, so first of all,
breweries are there to make beer, not necessarily food. So you don't always find food options at breweries themselves. But, you know, the thing is that you have to be mindful of, if you are going to eat food with a certain type of beer, kind of what the flavors in the beer are. And, you know, kind of what are you going to be trying to kind of pull out and pair? You don't want to pair something really heavy with like a light salad. So you have to be mindful about kind of how you're going to pair those things together.
So, Mary, what about you? You have dishes on local menus that you just really love pairing with a cold beer.
You know, if I go out for Thai or Chinese or Mexican, there's no way I'm going to have a glass of wine. It just shouts out for having a beer. And I'm, unlike my husband, who will drink any beer but really loves the darker, the imperial stouts and oatmeal stouts and things, I'm a wheat beer drinker, and that goes really well with most Thai and Asian food.
So, Jenny, you have brought in a list of favorite breweries and brew pubs that's divided by neighborhood. Do you think that, so we've heard about Kansas City beer, we've heard about Midwestern beer. This implies to me that we might have neighborhood beers, and that is super micro.
Yeah, you know, I think where we're at right now, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, was the fact that, you know, we really, you don't have to travel now to have good craft beer. I mean, every neighborhood right now usually has one or two like local breweries that are popping up. We have about 39 breweries right now in Kansas City, which is a lot, which does speak to the fact that every neighborhood, just about every neighborhood, has one. So you don't have to go far to get good craft beer in this town. And so I do think we're getting now, whether the flavor profiles of a certain neighborhood are really there, I'm not sure. But I think we're all still brewing Kansas City beer at the end of the day. So,
okay, well, this is the point when I want to bring in our third critic this morning, a guest critic. His name is Jay Aber, and he is the editor of the Kansas City Beer blog. So this is like his thing. Hi, Jay.
Morning.
So, what do you think of this idea of neighborhood beer identities?
The neighborhood brewery is definitely the next thing in brewing in Kansas City. You know, we used to have to go across the world to find good beer, and then we're looking across the country to find good beer, Colorado, California, Oregon. We don't have to do that anymore. It used to be we had to go across the city to have good beer, but now almost every neighborhood in the metro area has a good brewery in that neighborhood.
Or maybe like its whole entire own scene.
Yeah, definitely. There's a few parts of town that are very, very much brewing districts. North Kansas City, East Crossroads, each of those places have five or six breweries within a 5-minute walk of each other. So you can go to one place and, you know, they have a specific scene. And like Jeremy said, it's very collaborative. A lot of the breweries are working together. They're talking to each other. They're going to each other's bars. They're trying their beers. They're trying new things. So I don't know that we've quite gotten to the point where we have neighborhood identities and the flavor profiles of those beers, but we definitely have very, very defined beer districts in the city.
Jenny, your list starts up north, as you put it, at Colony Handcrafted Ales.
So in North Kansas City, Colony opened up, and it's kind of a multifaceted business. It's a coffee shop, it's got a restaurant, it's got a live music venue, and it also happens to brew beer. And I was recommending it because of the food aspect, which is Bearded Man's Kitchen, which is in the back, which is, you know, B-E-E-R, right? Bearded Man. Anyway, long story short, there are two bearded men actually back in the kitchen making your food, and they're doing a variety of really high quality hamburgers and like fried chicken sandwiches or buffalo chicken sandwiches. And I stopped in there not that long ago and had a beer and I think a buffalo chicken sandwich at the time. And I had a bite of my partner's kind of hamburger. Delicious. I mean, really good. They have a Wagyu beef burger there. I mean, really, really doing some high quality stuff. So if you're looking for kind of sandwich with your beer, Colony is the place to go.
And what about the Crossroads?
Well, the Crossroads has lots of options. I'd recommend Brewery Imperial. That is a collaboration between Ted Habinger, who's a chef in town who owns Room 39, and a fantastic brewer. And they got together basically and they're doing beer. They also have wine and cocktails if you want that as well. But the food there is really unique. You can find some really unusual things. I have to get the chicken with the tortillas, the kind of chicken tacos. I love that so much.
That's on my list too.
Yeah,
and I would,
all three of you, I believe, are recommending Brewery Imperial.
Well, Brewery Imperial, I would say, is the one brewery in town that they put as much focus on the food as the beer. And
agreed.
That's because Ted is there. I mean, they have a real chef in the kitchen and creating the menu. And so all the food goes really well with beer, and it's really good food. It's not just throw burger or wings.
Have you had the rabbit mole?
I have, and that was the other thing on my list.
It's on my list, too. Yeah. I love it.
What can you tell us, Jay, about Brewery Imperial and how it fits in the beer community?
Yeah, they brew some excellent beers. I think it's interesting with the new kind of class of the brew pubs that have opened up, like Brewery Imperial, Colony, Brew Lab in Overland Park, and going over to Lawrence with Lawrence Beer Company. There's a lot of experimentation in the beer world. There's a lot of experimentation with new flavors, new flavor profiles, sour beers, fruit beers, spice beers, and in these new brew pubs, you can see that with the food as well. It's the same with the food scene. There's a lot more experimentation, looking to international influences. And so these places that are making excellent beer, you know, smelling, tasting beer, and understanding those profiles isn't any different than food. So if you have a good taste for what a good beer is going to taste like, then you probably can also identify those same kind of flavors that you like in food and have a really good taste for good food. So a lot of these breweries are making really excellent beer and excellent food. I personally love the sour brown that Brewery Imperial is doing. I'm not sure if they have it on tap right now. They had it on, and I think it's coming back. But, you know, a dark sour brown beer with like the rabbit mole is really excellent
awesome.
And kind of unique pairing.
Describe, the sour beer trend has been going on for a while now, but can you explain what that is for those who haven't tried sour beer? It's very different.
Yeah, it's very different. And it's kind of actually unique. That's kind of one of the few things I think Kansas City has gained its own niche in the brewing culture in America, that most other cities really don't make that much sour beer. And in Kansas City, almost every single brewery here is making sour beers. And what it is, you can kind of think of it, it's more of a tart kind of flavor. It's not nearly as sour as, you know, something like vinegar or something approaching that. It's a kind of a light tart, you know, a sort of a lemonade kind of citrusy profile for these beers. And you can get from just a little bit sour to totally mouth puckeringly sour that you can't hardly finish it. But most of them are pretty balanced, and they're great for hot weather, summer, very refreshing, very crisp. And so, yeah, it's a very new thing, and I would recommend that you try them out. And you have to come to it with an open mind. If you think, I'm going to drink beer, and you order a sour beer, you're going to be very surprised if you don't kind of prepare yourself, because it's a very different experience from the typical beer.
But it is really a big thing right now. At Boulevardia last June, we went, and the longest line was for Side Projects, which is out of St. Louis. And you can't buy it except at the brewery. So everybody wanted to try it. And it is really puckery. It was not my cup of tea, but it was fun to try.
It's the equivalent of maybe a shrub in the cocktail world. I mean, it's kind of that vinegary, kind of sweet tart, puckery, yeah.
Let's talk with Chris, who's called 816-235-2888. Chris is calling from Stillwell. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I just wanted to recommend Martin City Brewing. It's at 135th Street, just west of Holmes. It's Caddy Corner to Jess and Jim's. Been going about 5 years, and they make about 8 beers. They are great beers, and their Hardway IPA is tremendous. Really, really worthwhile.
What do you like about that beer?
Well, it has a high IBU content, you know, which it's bitter. The bittering units, so it's high, so it's you know it's an IPA. Second you taste it, it's great, and also it just stands out. It's as good as any IPA. I would put it up to any IPA that I've ever had.
Is Martin City Brewery, and Mary, you have some food recommendations if you're going to hit Martin City Brewery as well.
They have a long list of really good sandwiches, Cubans, Rubens, burgers, and then they have a pizzeria next door, and recently opened in 103rd and Mission, a pizzeria to go along with their wide range of beers.
And Mary, as long as we are driving outside of KC proper, Free State in Lawrence, we have had several people call in, not able to stay on the line to talk about it, but wanting to talk about, of course, Free State Brewery in Lawrence, which what
Boulevard Brewing Company is to Kansas City, Free State is that and more in some ways to Lawrence.
Exactly. And it's been around longer than Boulevard. And it used to be when you went to a KU basketball game, that was one of the few places to go eat.
That's right.
And now, of course, Lawrence has an incredible array of great restaurants. But it's just a really popular place. And, you know, it's typical brew pub kind of food, but you can get great beer to go along with.
Jay, what do you have to say about Free State?
Yeah, Free State, I mean, it's a classic. They make great beer. Love going there, going to the restaurant. The food, just very, very solid, you know, traditional brew pub food. Great line of year-round beers. The Free State Oktoberfest is out now. It's one of my favorite Oktoberfests in the world. Yeah, it's a great place. And like Mary said, there's a lot of new places opening up in Lawrence as well. We were just talking about Lawrence Beer Company on the east side of town there. You know, kind of that newer class of brew pub has really interesting food, doing new stuff, really great modern vibe to it. So there's a lot of places in Lawrence now where, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, Free State was kind of it.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller. Kathy in Overland Park wants to talk to us about some of the places in Lawrence. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. I was just calling about Lawrence Brew Company because it is relatively new and it does have really great food and great beer. They're really enthusiastic. I don't have any association with them, but they're enthusiastic and just do a great job. And it's
well, Kathy,
real food, so if you're tired of brew food, brew pub food,
when you say real food, what do you mean?
Well, some seasonal food. They have an actual chef, maybe some butternut squash, something marrow. they mix up their menu. They're new. I think they're only a few months old. I drive in from Overland Park just to go there.
Well, cool. Thanks, Kathy.
And they're active in the community, so
cool.
Enthusiastic people. Not trying to compete with Free State or anything.
Great.
Really good food.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
You know, as we're talking about Lawrence, before we're going to have a break shortly, but before we do, can we talk a little bit about the West Bottoms? Because the West Bottoms is also a big part of our beer scene. And Mary, you're telling us about Stockyards Brewing Company, right next door to the newly reopened Golden Ox.
Exactly. And that redo, I mean, the Golden Ox was huge. And when it closed, they divided the building into two parts, really three, because there's also a cafe there. And the brewing company has been around for a while, and they've got really, really good beers. It's if you walk in there, it feels like you could be in a small Western town with the old booths and the, you know, the old prints on the walls. And as I say, they don't have much in the way of food, but you can go next door and get a burger or a steak or whatever you want to go with.
You know what I love at Stockyard Brewing Company? I love their crab chips. Have you ever had their crab
no,
chips?
No, I haven't.
It's probably just potato chips with Chesapeake Bay, you know, crab seasoning put on them. But I'm telling you, if you want something salty and crunchy to go with your beer, I love that combination. Really, really interesting.
And
yeah,
Jenny,
crab chips.
You're also talking about Boulevard's Beer Hall in the West Bottoms.
Yeah, well, I don't know what that I'd call it. Maybe the West Side.
West Side is
where I'd say that right. Probably is. But yeah, I mean, Boulevard so needed a recreational hall where they could do their tours, and they obviously have those two decks with the beautiful view of downtown now. It's a really big space. It's so impressive. It's great to bring out of town guests. I'm just so happy that they were able to kind of get this building and be able to present this face, if you will, to not only locals, but tourists alike. They have a very limited food menu. I love their Cajun nuts. I cannot go there and not get the Cajun nuts.
And
what is it about
sure
those?
You bring a bunch of people because the portions are huge.
Yeah, the portions are huge. But they have a lot of like pretzel dogs, you know, a handful of pretzel dogs and some chips and nuts and kind of snacky things. I think it's some charcuterie boards.
Well, and the pretzels with cheese sauce. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer with your beer.
I know, for sure.
So, Jay, what is your favorite Boulevard beer or the beer that interests you most of the Boulevard offerings?
Well, I'm a sour beer addict. So the Boulevard Love Child series, I think they're on Love Child 9 now at this point. It's probably one of the best sour beers produced in America right now. And each year they produce a new one, and they're over time they've saved some back and aged them, and they're blending 3, 4, 5 years worth of sour beers into this new beer, and that's one of my favorites.
Well, there is just a little time left if you want to tell us about your favorite local beer or your favorite local brew pub at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Hurry up and do it now. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm here with Jay Aber, Jenny Vergara, and Mary Block, and we are talking about beer for just a little while longer here on KCUR's Central Standard. And I want to make sure that we are hearing about all of our critics' very, very, very favorite top recommendations. So, Jay, since you have the Kansas City Beer blog, is there a beer, a local beer or brewery or location setting for enjoying beer that we haven't talked about yet today that just has to make it into this show?
Yeah, I would say KC Beer Co. is one of my favorite places. And as a father with young children, that's the best place for families to go. And this time of year, when we've got great weather, they've got an awesome beer garden outside, and they've got kind of the perfect beers for this season. Their fest beer that they have on right now is an Oktoberfest. It's really, specifically brewed to be drank at this time of year in this weather. And so when we get these nice days and the weekends, you go there, there might be just as many kids running around outside as there are parents. And when the kids are happy, the parents are happy. When the parents are drinking great fest beer and other fall seasonal beers, and then everyone's very happy.
Everyone's very, very happy. And Jenny, this is also on your list. Your list goes by neighborhood, so this fits into your out south.
Yeah, I guess I kind of started drawing the line at about 75th Street. I was like, all right, everything past 75th Street, we'll just lump into out south. But KC Beer Co. needs to be brought to our attention, not only because of the German style beer that they're doing, but also the German food. And every day of the week, they offer a different special. And these specials, I'm telling you, I'm crazy about. So there's one on Tuesday that's called The Worst Case. And it's basically a Bavarian pretzel that's smothered with bratwurst, Gruyere cheese, and cheddar cheese. It's baked off. Really good. It's served with a little bit of a dipping sauce, spicy mustard. Wednesday has a Jägerschnitzel, which, I'm a freak show for that, with spätzle. Delicious. Mushroom gravy. Thursday is a pork goulash with spätzle. So, if you like some of these German, and then they have a giant soft pretzel. If I'm going to get a soft pretzel, that's where I'm going. It's like 14 ounces or something crazy. But it's a great family place. It's got a beautiful outdoor area. So, yeah.
And this is like sort of the very southern end of Waldo, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say it's right in the heart of Waldo, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Okay, so that's KC Beer Company, and in case you're looking it up, that's beer with an I-E. Mary, what have we not talked about yet that we have to?
Well, in terms of places that have food, and we said at the top of the show there aren't that many, we should give a shout out to Green Room Burgers and Beer, because they do small batch brews, and they have, as is in the name, really good burgers, a variety of great toppings, and since I have to say it, they've got really good French fries too.
You're paid to say it at this point, right? It's sponsored by.
And so for you, Jay, we've already talked about the place that you would go that you have to hit. But what do you think about more of what Mary's describing is less maybe brewery than brew pub? You know what I mean? Like, that is a different thing.
Yeah, and the brew pub, like Mary said, there really aren't that many, because the growth in craft beer brewing right now has been kind of the small nano brewery tap room. Really, it's because opening a restaurant is obviously costs a lot more money. There's a lot more risk involved than opening a very small tap room. So most of these new breweries, places like Border Brewing, Casual Animal, these places are pretty small, and they don't have food, but they got a great atmosphere and great beer. So I would definitely second Green Room, the burgers, the fries, just amazing. The double Dubliner with the Dublin cheese and the pumpernickel bun, that's one of my favorite burgers in the world.
Let's talk to Susie calling us from St. Joe. Hi, Susie.
Hello. I just wanted to mention a new brewery in St. Joseph called River Bluff. It's only been open, I think, a couple of months. They don't have food, but sometimes they'll have food trucks outside. And I understand if you're there and you want to order a pizza, that, you know, you can have a pizza delivered or whatever, or even take your own food in.
Well, cool.
It's been a really nice new gathering spot. They restored an old building in St. Joseph. You know, occasionally they have live local music, and they've also incorporated some old neon signs from St. Joseph, like the Olympia Lanes shut down and they tore that building down, but they have the neon signs.
Well, cool.
Susie, into their design.
Thank you so much. And, you know, that does bring up these, when you think about a brewery or brew pub and they're places that people gather. So that is an important part of it that she's describing, just the gathering place aspect. Let's talk with Marcia. Marcia is calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I just wanted to call. I hope I haven't missed Beer Station as a recommendation. It's in the Brookside Waldo, kind of on the edge of Waldo. And it's on 120 East Gregory. They describe themselves as the first craft beer tasting bar, bottle shop, a concept that combines tavern environment with packaged beer store plus a full food menu.
Well, cool.
And their food is amazing. The owner is awesome, and they open their doors. They've raised a lot of money for lots of good charities. And
so this brings us back to that whole gathering place concept, and it sounds like Marcia's a fan of Beer Station for that. Jenny, is there another place that we haven't talked about that we have to?
I think Brew Lab deserves a mention. They're relatively new down in downtown Overland Park. They started out as just kind of a supply shop where you could buy stuff and learn how to brew beer, and they're still doing that in this space. But they've also added a restaurant piece to this, which I think makes it more of a gathering spot where you can kind of hang out. And the whole gist of this is that, you know, they kind of want to encourage people to get into brewing, whether it's brewing at home or on a larger scale. And they want you to bring your stuff in. And if it's good enough, they'll put it on tap, which I think for people who love to brew beer, this is a real boon. But they have tacos. They do tacos on Taco Tuesday. I mean, you can't not talk about their street tacos. But it's, you know, they're pretty much, you know, corn tortillas, you can get chicken, you can
get
pork.
I love that it's like a little incubator for home brewers.
Right. I mean, this is where you want to go and kind of hang out if you really want to talk beer. Like, everybody in there wants to talk to you about their latest beer project. So I like the space, too. They did a nice job.
Before we go, let's hear quickly, very quickly, from Bob in Raymore. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Good morning.
What do you want to recommend?
There's a nice new little place that opened a few months. Called Call Sign Brewery.
Call Sign Brewery.
Air Force, kind of a lot of retired military, Air Force, reserve guys that have put together a brewery that's really cool. 1447 Gentry in North Kansas City.
Well, Bob, thank you. And it sounds like it has anyone tried that? It sounds like a former Air Force base?
I've not been able to make it there. Like, you know, there's almost 40 breweries in town, so with the one-year-old and three-year-old, it's hard to make it to all of them, but I've definitely heard good things, and it's another one, you know, with five breweries in North Kansas City, it's easy to hit that along with those other ones in a day trip.
So, Jay, before we go, do you think that there's anything Kansas City doesn't have and needs?
I think we just need more breweries.
More?
More.
More. More beer. Our time is up. Critics, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our critics this morning were Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, Mary Block, blogging about food at Around the Block, and a guest critic, Jay Aber, editor of the KC Beer Blog. You can get our official list of the best local breweries in Kansas City at kcur.org/centralstandard later today, or if you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, that list will come right to you. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Chris Young, and intern Sophia Gillespie. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.